Welcome to the Point and Click podcast here from Des Plaines Public Library. I'm Dave. I'm here with Jamie. And today we've got special guest Roberta sitting in for Tony. We're going to talk about all kinds of movies and video games and books today, as we do in every podcast. And today I'd like to start with a video game called Doom. Now, I don't know what you know about Doom. The original Doom is maybe 20 years old, 15 years old. It's known for just being three-dimensional. More than anything else. Now that's so commonplace, everyone plays a 3D game, but Doom, it was a revolution. And it was about walking around through the depths of hell, shooting evil demons that would throw fireballs at you. Anyway, here we are 15 years later, and there's a new Doom. And it's made by id Software, the same people who made the original, but none of the same people, actually. It's the same company, it's the same label, but none of the same people. And I am delighted to say this game is excellent. I had no idea it would be this good. I expected the worst. I expected people who only half cared and didn't know what they were doing to do half a job, but this game is amazing. The best part about it is it's fast-paced. You're moving, you're shooting, you're jumping, you're running, you're going through doors, you're spinning in circles, you're constantly on the move, constantly on the brink of death, trying to kill these demons and advance with the most basic of plot. It's just like destroy this thing and you say, okay, and you spend a level walking to that thing and then you destroy it. And then the next level is destroy this next thing and you spend the level walking through and then you destroy it. It's just that easy. There's not much to it, but the point is the action is that the game is fun and it's exciting.
Is the storyline the same, like a reboot of the original Doom, or is it a kind of like a continuation?
It's just kind of new.
Okay.
It's the same theme.
Okay.
But it's a totally new story. It could be a sequel. It could be a prequel. I'm not sure. They didn't really care that much about where it fits in specifically. Mm-hmm. But it does have a lot of the tropes of the first Doom in it. There are health pickups, which is something that they don't do in games anymore. Nowadays in games, when you take damage, you're supposed to run around a corner and just wait a couple seconds and your health refills. You don't pick up med kits. And this one, you pick up med kits. So it's kind of a throwback. And you'd think people would be averse to that. Like, we've evolved since that point. But no, like, people love it. People love that. I'm on the brink of death. One more hit and I could die. And there's nothing I can do until I find that precious med kit or armor kit around the corner. There's a lot of exploration. The key cards are back. So, like, you walk up to a door and says, no, you need the blue key card to get through this door. You got to scrounge around the level looking for the blue key card, which, again, is ancient game design. But they brought it back for this, and it works. I love it. People love it. The reviews for this game are stellar across the board. The one pullback is the multiplayer, which was actually made by a different company. People hate the multiplayer. They hate it. It's derivative of Call of Duty. It's the same thing they've done 100 times before. If you've played any multiplayer in the last 5 years, you've played this multiplayer. Don't waste your time. But the single-player campaign is excellent. It's fun. It's loud. It's fast. It's self-aware. The music is very cheesecake metal, if that's a word. Where, you know, it's grinding guitars, but, you know, it doesn't take itself super seriously. It has also, I want to discuss the protagonist. The protagonist is what's called a silent protagonist in this game, which is kind of unique to video games, where you've got a guy running around and doing things and interacting with things, but never actually speaks, never actually says words out loud. And that's something that video games do so that you can kind of put yourself...
just fully immersive.
Right.
Okay.
Otherwise, if he says something and you're like, well, I wouldn't say that, then mm-hmm. you're kind of pulled out of the experience. Video games can do this.
So mm-hmm. there's no elaborate backstory like there is with Halo where they're all like speaking dialogue and they're like trying to make it more like a movie? I mean, that's my exposure to video games in a nutshell, right?
Sure, sure. No, the beginning is very cryptic. You just kind of wake up and you do your thing. You wake up, there's demons in the room, there's a gun on the ground, you pick it up, you start shooting. And then you start getting told from some narrator, some scientist somewhere in the complex, like, oh, you've got to go to this place and destroy this thing. So you go to that place and destroy that thing. And then he says, oh, now you got to go to this place and destroy this thing. So you do that. But along the way, you kind of react funny to these things. Like if he says something and he makes some joke about you, your fist will just bash and destroy the communicator, something like that. So it's funny somehow. And you get a sense of who this character is, even though he never says a word. He doesn't even have a name. People refer to him as Doom Guy, and that's as far as it goes.
What platforms is this for?
It is PC, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4. Here at the library, we do have it for Xbox One and PlayStation 4.
Okay.
And so place your holds, because I think it's going to be real popular.
What's the length of the game before you finish it usually? Like, how much gameplay can you get out of
it? If you're playing the single-player campaign, it's going to be 12 to 14 hours.
Okay.
Pretty good. Longer than most, not much longer. Most games are usually 8 to 10, so this is a little bit longer. I had a blast with it, playing it. It took me several days to get through. I wholly recommend it. And that's Doom by id Software. All right. And now we're going to move on to Roberta. Welcome, Roberta, to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
What are you going to talk about today?
Well, we were thinking about, sort of as a general frame for the conversation, thinking about Captain America. And of course, we live in the renaissance of comic books and comic characters being made into television and movies. And so I started thinking about comics that I had read in the last year or so that I had really, really liked. And only one really leaps to mind, and that is the Harley Quinn series that was sort of reinvented, after being rebooted, after being created. Harley Quinn first came around for the animated Batman show, and
yes,
she was completely nuts and fun and very likable. And of course, a very good animated character, because she does look like a Harlequin. She's half red, she's half black, so she's very bright and colorful. And then Amanda Conner, that's C-O-N-N-E-R, if you're looking for the graphic novels in the library collection, and we do have them, but Amanda Conner created a new Harley Quinn. And Harley Quinn's story is that her full name is Dr. Harlene Quinzel, and she was a psychiatrist in Arkham House when the Joker was incarcerated, and as one does, she fell in love with him. And they had an ongoing relationship, and then, of course, he spurned her and threw her in a vat of bleach, and now she's really pale, and her hair is two different colors. So she's still very nuts. She's very crazy, but she maintains some of that sense of humor, and her weapons of choice tend not to be really gory. I mean, her weapon of choice is either a baseball bat or a giant wooden mallet. And so there's a fair amount of splat, but not a lot of gore. And of course, there's also the new Suicide Squad movie coming in August, and Margot Robbie is going to be playing Harley Quinn in that. So she's kind of everywhere. But the books are great. I mean, they have a variety of artists and a variety of writers, and they're revisiting classic characters. I mean, at one point she goes on a blind date and it turns out that it's Batman, and she says he's not as good kisser as Bruce Wayne. And, you know, so they're bringing some of those characters in, but they're, I don't know. I mean, they, in the best possible way, they remind me a little bit of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, if she were psychotic all the time, just some of the time.
When did those come out?
Those, I think the first ones came out, you know, in individual volumes maybe 3 years ago, because I saw one of the collected volumes in a bookstore about a year ago, and I asked our teen librarian to buy them, hoping that they would, in fact, be great for teens, and they have been, because they're all checked out.
So. Who else is in the series? Does she fight good guys if she's a bad guy, or?
She's kind of an anti-hero. She finds out in the beginning of the series that she's inherited this sort of rattletrap tenement building in New York, and she goes to be the landlord, and she finds out that, you know, among other things, they're sort of running a freak show slash burlesque in the basement, and so she's doing that, and she's also in a roller derby league, and her best friend is, in fact, Poison Ivy from the comics, and so she's trying to rid her neighborhood of bad guys. It's very sort of neighborhood specific, which is another thing I really like about it. And she's also got an incredible soft spot for animals, so she keeps adopting all these stray cats and dogs and then doesn't know what to do with all their poop. And so she invents like a big slingshot to shoot it off into neighborhoods that she doesn't like so much, which is very funny. So that's the new Harley Quinn series. And the author, again, is Amanda Conner, C-O-N-N-E-R. And we have the books in the library, so I hope you'll check them out.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you, Roberta. Let's move on to Jamie. Jamie, what are you going to share with us today?
So I'm going to talk about my recent obsession. Last time I was here, I talked about the American Gods audiobook that I was listening to by Neil Gaiman, which was done by a full cast and was 20 hours long, but I fell in love with it. And since that time, I've listened to 7 more Neil Gaiman audiobooks, which are all available on Hoopla, the streaming and download digital service we have here at the library. So you can check these out anytime. They're always available for users. But it's gotten to the point where I feel like Neil Gaiman is narrating my thoughts and dreams because he narrates a lot of the audiobooks. There's a couple that are full cast, but he does a lot himself. So sometimes I'll just be sitting on my computer or something, and I'm like, oh, like my thoughts are in Neil Gaiman's voice. Mm-hmm. But it's been interesting listening to the whole pantheon or a large set of the pantheon of Neil Gaiman's works all at once because American Gods was very dark and it was, yes. The storyline was very all-encompassing. But some of the other ones he's written are much more humorous, much more lighthearted. There was one called Good Omens, which he wrote with Terry Pratchett.
That's a great one.
Yep. And it's about, you know, the end of the world coming and the Antichrist rising, but it is very humorous and really funny. So it's great to see how his interests in mythology and folklore and, you know, these kind of mythical creatures and stories, and if they're placed in the present day or amongst, you know, your average human being, can come across as really gloomy or really dark and scary or really funny. And I just think the breadth of his ability as a writer has been always really fascinating to me. But the one I'm reading right now is Trigger Warning, and it's one of the newest ones. It came out just very recently. And that's a collection of what he calls short stories and disturbances. So it's a collection of short fiction, and a lot of them he wrote when he was asked to do a specific topic or for a specific set of limitations. There was one story that he wrote, a specific little vignette for every month of the year. And for every month, he asked a question to his followers on Twitter that had to do something with that month.
I remember that.
Yeah. And so his Twitter responders, you know, gave him different ideas. And then he wrote them in these little vignettes and put them in the whole series. So there was one short story per month. And although I really enjoy these stories, I feel like it doesn't get to encapsulate his strengths as much because he's so great at world building. Mm-hmm. If you think about American Gods or some of these other ones, he sets up this universe that has its own rules and its own regulations and very dynamic characters who are dealing with these, you know, supernatural struggles. Mm-hmm. But in these short stories, you don't get to see that world building as much just by the limitations of the short case. Sure. And so the strangeness or the weirdness doesn't seem as fully developed or as fully necessary as some of the novels, where some of the strangeness just seems strange. There's one story about a woman who likes self-tanner and then accidentally uses some dye that makes her into this like mythical being. But instead of a longer, you know, if there's a novel, we get to see more of her personality and her motivations. Mm-hmm. In this one, it just seems like, oh, this is an interesting idea, but it doesn't seem as fully fleshed out.
Sure.
But otherwise, his books just captivate me. So I would recommend them.
Absolutely.
The other ones, so I'll just list the titles. So after American Gods, I read Neverwhere, the Graveyard Book, Anansi Boys, The Ocean at the End of the Lane, which we did for a lot of book clubs here at the library, Stardust, Good Omens, and then Trigger Warning. Mm-hmm. So that's been on my mind for the past month.
That's wonderful. I haven't read Neil Gaiman in a long time, but there was a time in my mid-20s where I read these books, and it just, hearing their titles just makes me feel excited once again.
It's true. I mean, I think you can really go back and read Neil over and over and over again. And I think I've read American Gods maybe 4 or 5 times.
Sure.
And, one of our colleagues, David Whittingham, calls that the great American novel. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting that he's a Brit. I mean, he lived in Minneapolis for years and years and years. So he's definitely kind of an expat Brit. But the way he writes about America is really riveting, I think. That world building where he gets to explore a lot of different places and a lot of different characters. I really get what you're talking about there.
And American Gods is coming to Stars, as I think we talked about last podcast, but we're so excited. We'll talk about it again.
We're so excited about that. before we started recording, I was telling David that when Ian McShane was cast as Wednesday, I think 5 different people emailed me. And I'm like, yes, I know. I'm very, very excited. A big Ian McShane fan. So
I'm excited for just a wider audience finding out about this book and this author, too.
Well, and I think that's interesting because considering how many hands he's had in various movies and television shows, his work has not been widely adapted. Neverwhere was made into a movie, and the one about London Underground was made into a television series in Britain. But that, I think, is about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
And I think that, you know, even though a lot of his have fantasy elements, I think just the wider audience, even if you think you're not necessarily like a fantasy reader, mm-hmm. there's just so much that would appeal to you because it's not, you know, just fantasy sci-fi. For example, like the Graveyard book, even though it's about a live boy growing up in a graveyard being raised by ghosts, it's not just about that. It's about finding out who you are and being different, and everything is about so much more than just the fantastical elements.
And he has a real broad age range.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, a lot of adults are reading Coraline, and a lot of adults are reading the Graveyard book, and then the kids are kind of working their way up to American Gods, which is, you know, what you do your senior year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you, Jamie. We always love to talk about Neil Gaiman here on the podcast, but we're moving on now to Captain America Civil War, the movie sensation of the spring. It's made $1 billion. Jamie, what did you think of Captain America Civil War?
I really enjoyed it. I went in not being a huge... I haven't read any of the comics. Mm-hmm. I had to be updated at many of the points of the Marvel Cinematic Universe by my fiancé when I whispered. I was like, who is that again? You know. Mm-hmm. But I think as a person who is not, you know, a diehard fan, it still appealed to me in so many different ways. And I think one of the things that I enjoyed the most is that it kind of towed the line of being in between an Avengers movie where it has tons of characters and he's a broadcast, and then, you know, the standalone ones where it's more focused on one character, because you did have a huge range. We got to see Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man, which will be coming up. His movie's coming out in what year?
I think it's next year.
Okay, yep. Which was really funny and I really enjoyed. But you also just got to see the depth of the morality and ethics of the different characters, even though there's many of them. One thing I didn't like as much in the other Avengers movies is that there are so many characters, I felt like each one didn't have a personality as much. We didn't get to see their ethics or what drove them, except for being, you know, a broader trope. But here, I thought we got to really see the motivations and the pain of Captain America or of Iron Man and their backgrounds. And I thought that the final scene... Are we doing spoilers?
Oh, yeah, please do.
Absolutely. Okay. We are spoiling the movie for anyone who is listening.
Yeah.
So in that scene between Iron Man and Captain America where they're just battling and fighting each other, it's not this huge blockbuster, like, blow up a million people and everything. Yeah. And that was one of the points of the movie, is dealing with the fallback of we're killing all these innocent people. Mm-hmm.
The collateral damage to the cities, the buildings, mm-hmm. right.
How do we deal with that? And the fact that that final scene was just two characters who'd been friends, you know, battling it out versus this huge blow up, I thought was really poignant and I really enjoyed.
Sure.
Well, one of the things I really like about Captain America is that he is a moral character. Mm-hmm. I mean, and his morality is a big part. It's a superpower for him. You know, he is making his decisions based on his long-term approach to heroism, mm-hmm. which is like he's very much your average guy, you know, thrown into this kind of miraculous situation. And I find that really interesting. And I like what you said about, you know, the big cast of characters. Because the first couple of Captain America movies I really, really liked because there were only a few. They were strong mm-hmm. good guy, bad guy, or, you know, Steve Rogers mm-hmm. and Agent Carter kind of thing. Those mm-hmm. partnerships were strong. And in the third one, I looked at the poster where I started counting the superheroes.
Counting the faces, yeah.
And I was a little concerned, and I'm like, oh my God, they're really going to squeeze a lot in. Oh, you know, Black Panther 2 and a cameo by Spider-Man. How rewarding is that going to be? So that was kind of a concern for me.
No, I would call it character development the movie. That is what this one is about. Age of Ultron, the Avengers 2 movie, was kind of just packed with let's introduce this character and this mm-hmm. character and this character and this character. And then this one, Captain America 3, takes those characters from Avengers 2 and just everyone gets a moment. Mm-hmm. Like, let's talk about this person, let's talk about this relationship, let's talk about this conflict, and that's the whole movie, is let's explore these characters. We've met them already, now let's explore them. And even though they introduce a few, they really only introduce Black Panther in a long way, like establishing who he is and what he's about and where he comes from and what's the origin story. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man just shows up. Ant-Man just shows up. And they say, we already had movies. You know who Spider-Man
you
is.
You know who Spider-Man is. Yeah.
They even make kind of a joke about it in the movie where Peter Parker, when he's talking to Tony Stark, says, well, you know, since the thing that happened. And he keeps on talking. He doesn't say what happens because the audience knows.
Because he doesn't have to.
We all know that he was bitten by by a radioactive spider.
The only regret I have about the Captain America movies is that sometimes I wish we could have like more flashbacks to Captain America in World War II.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, I really love the Howling Commandos.
Yeah.
And I wish we could see a little more of them. And I think the whole S.H.I.E.L.D. Hydra thing, that conflict was less successful, bringing that forward.
Yeah.
You know, those two kind of major powers, that's something kind of like old Bond, mm-hmm. you know? And so I'm kind of glad that they blew that up, that
yeah.
they blew mm-hmm. S.H.I.E.L.D. up and made S.H.I.E.L.D. Hydra some sort of crazy hybrid.
Sure. And kind of killed Hydra in this movie, kind of mm-hmm. A metaphorical death at the very least. They kind of established from the beginning that this is not about Hydra. Like, Hydra was in it for a minute, and then they're out. And now it's about the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone kind of jumped off into their own little archetype, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Ant-Man and Spider-Man were both very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Black Panther was very serious. You know, you really got a sense for what kind of character this is. They really, you know, separated them out so that they didn't kind of run together. Like, kind of unfortunately, like the dwarves in the Hobbit movies. You can't tell Dory and Ori
despite
apart.
Despite the elaborate hairstyles,
right.
You could not tell them apart.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything in the movie that really surprised either one of you?
Not especially. So I'm a comics fan. I read the books. And Baron Zemo was in this movie, but very undersold. He is a much more developed, much more interesting character in the comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just, he was just a guy, and let's give him a famous name.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
So that did surprise me, but whatever. It worked. The movie worked. I'm not going to mourn the underselling of Baron Zemo, but that was a disappointment.
Is he supposed to be a recurring character? Because, you know,
yes.
he didn't die, so I assume that he's going to be.
Maybe he shows up again in Infinity War. I don't know. But,
yeah.
That character was not really a character, and he was just kind of like, I am the personification of
mm-hmm.
the revenge motive.
Mm-hmm.
And just walking through the movie and kind of doing what he had to do to advance, you know, plot points,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of too bad, but again, he's not the point. This is not the Baron Zemo movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Captain America Iron Man movie. So it kind of made sense to undersell him, even though I think they could have just gone with another name. Maybe not. I don't understand that choice.
I'm fascinated to see that there is no exhausting the comic book universe.
Yeah.
You know, and I really, we do live in a golden age for
mm-hmm.
that. And so I'm like, yay, they're going to make Black Panther
mm-hmm.
movies. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're going to see more of Chadwick Boseman. And we're
mm-hmm.
going to see more of Anthony Mackie.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be really, really interesting since the comics world has been pretty lily white so
mm-hmm.
far.
Yeah.
As much as I love Chris Evans, and I think he's great. Honestly, I think he is really an underrated actor. If you've seen Snowpiercer
yes.
mm-hmm.
Or Sunshine, if you've seen the movie Sunshine, he is absolutely wonderful in both of those films. And
mm-hmm.
you would not know it from the Fantastic Four kind of
sure.
yeah.
comic milieu he's been
yeah,
immersed in.
The crossover there.
Yeah.
Hilarious in Scott Pilgrim, even though it's a minor bit. He's Evil X number two. the really beefy, intimidating one.
Yeah, exactly. The intimidating. Well,
yeah.
if you're Michael Cera, I think almost anybody
would
over
that could be.
5'7" is a little intimidating. But
I was wondering, why do you think that the Marvel has been more successful than, say, DC in creating this like sprawling, you know, bringing all these characters together? Like, and then look at like Batman versus Superman and.
Maybe, I think that's a really good question. And a lot of people have talked about the different directors
mm-hmm.
and the different films. But I just, you know, as a reader, I always found the Marvel characters more interesting. And I think part of that is because I started with the X-Men, and they're
mm-hmm.
all so flawed and hormonal all the time.
Sure.
And I think that was a really easy way to identify with those
mm-hmm.
characters. And, of course, Peter Parker is that teenage
mm-hmm.
icon as
mm-hmm.
well. And I think Batman and Superman, they're like so well developed and so thoroughly written.
Yeah, there's 75 years of Batman. Everyone has a different opinion of who Batman is and
mm-hmm.
who Batman
mm-hmm.
should be. That's kind of not so strong with the X-Men, kind of not so strong with Iron Man, even though he's an old hero. Like, he was under the radar for a
mm-hmm.
long time. He didn't really pop unless you were a Marvel fan. You didn't really know Iron Man from Thor, right?
Mm-hmm.
The way
yeah.
people knew and expected things from Batman and Superman didn't
mm-hmm.
expect anything from Iron Man and Thor.
But then I guess it really has to have something to do with the films, because you look at Captain America, talk about an elderly character from
mm-hmm.
a generation that we really don't have much to identify with, but mm-hmm. those movies really established him as an interesting person, a mm-hmm. person you wanted to spend more time with.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's the movies were good is kind of the basis for it. Man of Steel, not so good. Batman, Superman, not so good. But Iron Man 1 is very good. Mm-hmm. Captain America 1 is very good. Captain America 2 is very good.
It was really good. I was so disappointed in the second Avengers movie. Mm-hmm. You know, I just wanted to throw things because it felt like one long introduction to characters that are going to be in another movie. Mm-hmm. Not this one.
Yeah.
Not this one, and you're not going to ever see them again. But, mm-hmm. you know, I hope you enjoyed your glimpse of Anthony Mackie because he's going to have his own movie soon.
It was kind of, I think it was weighed down by production points. Like, you have to introduce this character.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you absolutely. Have to introduce that character because we've got all these movies coming, and then that ended up being the whole movie. Was, mm-hmm. let's introduce all these characters. And then.
So is there anything you're really looking forward to that's coming out this summer? I mean, I did mention Suicide Squad, but.
I'm really hoping Doctor Strange is weird.
Yes.
Doctor Strange. Yeah. Although I have to admit, I kind of jumped on the bandwagon about being annoyed that Tilda Swinton is playing an Asian character.
That's
true. I was not real happy about that.
Yeah, it was an interesting discussion. The director came back with it's a Tibetan character, and there's a lot of people pushing for a Chinese actor for mm-hmm. a Tibetan role, and it's like, well, that doesn't make sense mm-hmm. either.
Yeah, and they're actors, and they're mm-hmm. all supposed to, you know, it didn't occur to me to be annoyed that Benedict Cumberbatch was playing a Sikh in the Star mm-hmm. Trek movies. I was perfectly fine with that.
Sure.
So clearly, my opinion is not to be weighed that heavily.
Well, it's an interesting corner of movie making now is this appropriate? Is that appropriate? Some things feel like they are and some things feel like they aren't. And that's mm-hmm, no mm-hmm. way to make decisions is what feels okay and what
and
doesn't.
And I love Tilda Swinton. I mean, she can absolutely. Do everything. So, but, you know, I don't know if you've seen the meme going around about, you know, starring John Cho. You know, the idea that if you put an Asian American actor in this part, how surprising and unusual would that be? But it's John Cho, and he's so good, and he's so hot. Why wouldn't he be in every mm-hmm. movie?
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I like the idea that people are maybe thinking about it a little more mm-hmm. than they used to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope it's a weird movie. I hope it's a different movie more than anything. Mm-hmm. And Tilda Swinton and Benedict Cumberbatch have those capacities.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. After watching Civil War, I'm a little bit down on the next Avengers movie, the next Infinity War, or they're going to rename it apparently.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be in two parts, right?
That's going to be in two parts. Yep. It's going to be May 2017 and 18 or something like that.
Okay.
Or 18 and 19 maybe mm-hmm. even. I'm not sure. But after Avengers 2 got it wrong and Civil War got it right, I kind of want to let go of the here's a million superhero movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm kind of guarded on that one. I'm not too sure.
Well, I'll have to wait and see. Anything, Jamie, that you on your radar?
I love Benedict Cumberbatch, so I'm really excited about that, especially for like the strange bizarreness. And like you were saying before about, you know, people not knowing Iron Man versus Thor before. Like, I don't know anything.
I don't know anything about Doctor Strange.
Exactly.
Nothing.
So I think I'll be going in there knowing nothing and just wanting to be surprised.
But he has a really, really descriptive name because you know he is a doctor and it is going to be a really strange interaction. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yep. I'm also excited about seeing Suicide Squad, especially to see how women are depicted mm-hmm. in it too. So after you were talking about Harley Quinn, I'm excited to see like how they portray her on the screen versus, you know, sometimes, you know, the hypersexualized.
Oh, brutal. She's going to be that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But it does seem like it's going to be very kind of modern, gritty, you know, mm-hmm. lots of tattoos. But it just seems like in every shot I see that Margot Robbie is having the time of her life in this character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I look forward to seeing that. And Jared Leto in the steel teeth or whatever he's got with the blue
hair. Damaged tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's going to be very interesting.
Okay, so that was our discussion on Captain America Civil War. Obviously in theaters now, not at the library right now, but if you want to get caught up on your Marvel movies, we have the Iron Mans, we have the Thors, we have the Captain Americas. Come check them out.
If you want to see the Incredible Hulk, we have that
we
too.
We have that too.
Four different versions.
Yeah.
Ang Lee, you know.
All right, and that's it for today. Thank you, Roberta, for coming by.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
And that is the Pint and Click podcast. Thanks, everyone.